Up next, JX Assistant Producer Maddie Peterson offers a selection of short news features from around our region.
I'm Maddie Peterson. The town of Lakeview, near Oregon's southern border, has fallen on hard times. Major businesses have shuttered and opportunities are scant. Now, the town government faces an economic crisis, forcing its residents to step up and fill in the gap. Oregon Public Broadcasting's Joni Auden Land reports.
Lakeview Public Works foreman Pete Fortune walks into a workshop filled with boxes.
This used to be an old National Guard armory, so.
They're filled with thousands of feet of pipe. They were meant for a project to replace water meters in each home, but town officials bought way too much.
We were guessing that they bought 100 foot per house, which that's grossly over, because a lot of the time it only took 10, 12 feet to go from the main to,
So we're talking 10 times the pipe, basically.
Yeah. This is only a small portion of it. There's more in another building.
All these pipes, which the town has no plans to use, are symbolic of a town on the brink of financial collapse. Lakeview is home to more than 2,000 people, just north of the Oregon-California border, and it's faced many challenges in recent years. It took on millions of dollars in loans leaders say they can't afford. A former town manager was accused of mismanaging Lakeview's finances. Drowning in debt, the town cut dozens of jobs, raised fees, and has seen rampant leadership turnover. All this means the town government could become insolvent and continue to cut services. And people here don't have a lot of other options.
When you live apart from the rest of your fellow Oregonians, you figure out you've got to take care of yourselves.
That's Stan Foster, the interim town manager for Lakeview. When he started this job last July, the town had stopped paying its bills and wasn't collecting water payments from residents. Financial records were often missing. And the mood in Lakeview had turned sour.
And what I encountered were people that were pretty downtrodden, had been treated pretty poorly. We didn't have enough personnel, but there was no likelihood we were going to have enough personnel. Beginning of every month, I found that there was another stack of debts that I wasn't aware of.
Lakeview is a long way from anywhere in the middle of the high desert, sandwiched between the Warner Mountains and Goose Lake. Much of downtown is empty storefronts. There are only a couple restaurants and bars. Georgia Getty has lived here her whole life and remembers when Lakeview had more to offer.
And my kids, they really don't have anything to do. When I grew up here, we had dances, we had bowling, we had a theater, we had places to go and things to do and people to see. And now those fun things don't exist anymore. Okay.
One of the most active places in Lakeview is the downtown cafe and bakery. A group of friends comes here every morning to discuss the town's issues, like the large number of deer.
Yeah, we got more deer in town than we do outside. You know, I got to feed them by hand, and then you walk up again.
And they talk about the city government and the poor shape of the town's economy. William Neal worked at a nearby lumber mill for 42 years. Those kinds of jobs, he says, don't exist here anymore.
It's almost a government and a retirement community, and the economy is very depressed here. It's scary.
In the middle of this scary situation, some people in Lakeview have taken it upon themselves to help out. And because the town cannot afford to hire employees, many people have volunteered to do city jobs for little to no money. That includes IT work, picking up trash, fixing water systems, and payroll. Getty, for example, volunteered to help with city finances. She considers it part of her civic duty.
Everybody needs to kind of pitch in. I don't know where it went sideways at, but we got to get it upright again.
And residents are raising money to pay for their own services. They raised $170,000 to keep the local swimming pool open. One group sold nearly nude calendars to pay for winter snow plowing. Another bright spot is the town's new skate park. The local Rotary Club raised $500,000 thanks to grants and community support. Andrew Rucker helped oversee the project.
This used to be an old, dilapidated tennis court with two courts on it. And we went to the town and said, hey, we'd like to build a skate park here. Will you let us? And so they said, sure, as long as we don't have to build it.
The children took to it immediately, and it's often full. At sunset, parents point their headlights at the park so kids can skate into the evening. People in Lakeview say this is what they love about their town. Everyone knows everybody, and people are willing to step up when someone needs help. Now, they're hoping their local government can do the same and keep their town alive. I'm Joni Auden-Land reporting.
Residents of a retirement mobile home park in West Eugene are banding together to buy their own community after it was put up for sale by its out-of-state owners. KLCC's Rebecca Hansen-White reports.
Deanne Sweeper says her favorite thing about her home in Lakewood Vista isn't her view of the pond and fountain at the center or the geese nesting on its shore. It's the sense of community she's built over 8 years with her neighbors. She says now Lakewood Vista is for sale for the second time since she's lived here.
We want to keep that community, and we're old. I mean, what are we going to do if we can't live here anymore?
Sweeper is the chair of the board chosen by more than 200 residents to lead efforts to try and buy the mobile home park and turn it into a resident-owned community. Their efforts were first reported by the Eugene Weekly. Sweeper says in 2020, the last time Lakewood Vista was for sale, residents also banded together to try and buy it. But they lost out to its current owners, the Carlyle Group, one of the largest private equity groups in the country.
We've been told that we were outbid, but every time we got outbid, we found more money. The communication was not what it is under the new law. We were just really kind of left in the dark and told, nope, park sold, it's not, you didn't get it, and never mind.
In 2021, State Representative Julie Fahey of Eugene proposed legislation inspired in part by the Carlyle Group's acquisition of Lakewood Vista. That law required park owners to negotiate in good faith and give residents more time, 15 days to organize and formally express interest, and 45 to form a nonprofit and come up with an offer. At the time, Fahey testified that very few mobile home park resident groups had been able to successfully compete with private equity and corporate buyers, putting a major source of affordable housing at risk.
Mobile home parks are not a true free market because of the captive nature of the residents.
While park residents own their homes, new corporate owners often dramatically increase the rent on the land underneath when those tenants leave, making it very difficult for those who want out to find buyers who are able to cover the cost of the home and high lot rent. Peter Hanley is the executive director of CASA Oregon, which is helping Lakewood residents organize and finance an offer. He says the nonprofit has been able to help more than 24 parks convert to resident ownership. He says it will be challenging for a park as large as Lakewood Vista to become resident-owned, but there is a path forward.
This is the most stressful point of the process right now, is just kind of the big unknown.
He says residents may end up paying more in the first 2 or 3 years to help finance the transition. After that, turnover is low, and residents usually only vote to increase their rent to pay for collective needs.
After that initial rent increase, rent rarely goes up. I think across our 28 portfolio, it's less than 1% a year. Over time, you definitely see that the rent for these parks is well below the parks that would be in the surrounding area of similar size and similar amenities.
Sweeper says she's afraid that if Lakewood Vista residents don't succeed and the park ends up in the hands of another corporation, many will be gentrified out. Sweeper was grandfathered in on an old lease after the last sale, so she pays far less than new residents. She says her rent and cost of living has still been increasing steadily, far faster than Social Security.
I really would love to live here, but I won't be able to afford it. And if I can't afford this, then what can I afford?
Bill Miner, an attorney representing the Carlyle Group and the company that manages the property, Commonwealth Real Estate Services, says CASA of Oregon and the tenants have been provided with all legally required documents.
The purpose of this legislation, the opportunity to compete, is to give tenants exactly that, an opportunity to compete to become owners. And the ownership group and Commonwealth take that obligation very seriously.
Miner says Carlyle is awaiting the residents' offer, Lakewood Vista residents say they are still working with Casa of Oregon on loans and other potential funding and hope to fundraise in other ways once they form a nonprofit tenants cooperative. I'm Rebecca Hansen-White reporting.
From national forests to city parks, apple trees planted more than a century ago are still growing throughout the Pacific Northwest. In central Oregon, an effort is underway to find and uncover the history of each heritage tree. OPB's Jen Bidas reports.
It's a bright, crisp spring morning. Peter Laverso and CJ Johnson are deep in the Crooked River National Grassland near Madras.
Watch the barbed wire. I will stand over here.
Build us a little bridge, Peter.
They're making their way over fences and cow paddies to search for a handful of tagged apple trees. Laverso, who lives in Bend, begins picking leaves from one gnarled trunk.
This guy looks great.
This tree is in an apple orchard planted in the late 1800s during the state's homesteading era. Laverso places the leaves in a Ziploc bag.
It's not going to hurt the tree, and better to have too many than too few.
He'll send these samples to a lab at Washington State University for DNA testing to see what kind of tree it is and where it came from. Laverso is an amateur cider maker, and he recently found a community of fellow apple lovers after he met CJ Johnson.
When you see these old orchards and they are screaming for attention.
She spies a long-forgotten apple tree with a mess of brittle twigs tangled at the top.
For me as an apple person to look at a tree like that, you know, I just want to get out the pruners and cut.
The two are leaders of the nonprofit Heritage Apple Corps. Johnson started the organization to ensure that the history contained in the twisted branches of trees like these is preserved.
It was also really exciting in that there were other people like me who wanted to keep the history alive and the culture in these orchards.
The core group has 6 members, but they draw out a larger number of volunteers for special events like pruning days. They work through the Forest Service to get permits for reviving and protecting orchards like this one on remote public land. In the 1880s, these very trees were owned by the McCoy family.
It's kind of a haunting thing to think that when you bite into one of these McCoy or Cyrus orchard apple trees, you're biting into living history.
Jerry Ramsey is a descendant of the McCoys and grew up near the old orchards.
When I was a kid, I was no cowboy, but I liked to ride up there just for the sheer fun of riding in those wide open spaces.
On those horseback rides, he remembers stopping to pick apples in the summer. Now in his 80s, Ramsey is a local historian and has worked with Heritage Apple Corps members to trace the lineage of his ancestors' trees. Not every heritage apple tree is in a remote wilderness, though. Some are hiding in plain sight in cities and neighborhoods. Just past an outdoor mall in Bend's Old Mill District, Laverso is running down a dip. He heard there are some old apple trees down by the Deschutes River.
And here they are.
You would totally miss these from the trail, even though they're right off the trail.
Yeah, so one, two, and then...
He ducks under overgrown brush to pick newly sprouted leaves from a trio of trees. He'll know how rare the find is after DNA testing is done. At peak popularity, there were over 17,000 cataloged varieties of apples in the U.S. Today, there are less than half that many. During his forays to look for heritage trees, Laverso's hopeful he'll find a long-forgotten variety.
People have been here since time immemorial, and there's been history happening that whole time. Anybody can come up here, walk among these trees, taste the fruit, and I think there's something magical about that.
The Apple Corps also takes grafts to clone the trees. Laverso has 47 cloned saplings at his house, and he's looking forward to planting them in a nearby orchard later this year. He says since apple trees don't usually live over 100 years, the window to save them is closing. I'm Jen Bidas reporting.
That's it for today's exchange. I'm Mike Green. JeffExchange.org is our website where you can find these conversations and more, or you can subscribe to our shows wherever you get your podcasts.